you know that two's a marriage, three's a crowd.
Welcome, guys. Welcome to the first official episode of Three's a Crowd. I'm super excited about this. How about you, V?
Yeah, I'm very excited as well. We had a very interesting interview today.
That was insane. So today's topic is about psychology and crime. The title of today's episode is, in fact, do mental health issues excuse your actions in a day and age where everyone seems to have one?
We also discuss the stigmas that come along with having a mental disorder and the consequences, positive and negative, about being open.
Yeah, and so then that kind of leads on to the question that we addressed towards the end of the episode. Can you be born a criminal? So very exciting topics. Why don't you talk a bit more about it?
Right, so we sat down with Catherine Gilvery to investigate this further. And Catherine has a PhD in neuropsychology of schizophrenia. And she did her PhD under the Professor Sir Robert Murray in the Institute of Psychiatry in King's College.
Right, so then before and after working on her PhD, she worked at the Institute of Psychiatry and claims that she learned a great deal and gained a lot of experience with people with mental health disorders and criminality. She has then since been a professor at Roehampton University since 2002.
Yeah, and that's how I know her, because she was a guest lecturer in my module, Forensic Psychology. And in the beginning of this interview, I asked her what is the most interesting aspect of what she has been researching and working on.
Two is a company, three's a crowd.
I think... Well, it's gotten to the point now where I think public perception and social perception of mental health disorders is desperately under-researched, given the impact that it has on people and on culture. This is an area that needs so much more investigation and research, because until it's sorted, we will get more violence, we will get more mental health disorders, more unhappiness, more disintegration, until we understand mental health disorders a little more and stop blaming people and stop stigmatizing people for developing a disorder.
Do you feel that there's a misrepresentation of certain mental disabilities in media and movies?
Oh, without doubt.
Is there any particular mental disorder that is more misrepresented than others?
I think possibly two types, psychotic disorders and substance misuse. And there is a perception. Last night I spoke with a minister of a local Presbyterian Church, and his view and the view of the person who was there with us was that it's a choice people make. Nobody chooses to become an addict.
Yeah, I've seen that quite a lot in, I know the comment section on news articles on Facebook is the last place you should be, but sometimes, you know, you dive into it and there's a lot of what she's saying is like, they've gotten themselves into it. Why should my tax money go to someone who have like chosen to be in that situation? I think that is very, very common and incorrect.
Yes. There's a really very interesting study done relatively recently by a woman called Professor Sheila Hodgkins, forensic psychiatrist. And she has shown that there are very definite genetic differences between criminals and non-criminals, or certainly a proportion of them. And that she found that 25% of the Caucasian criminal offenders that she had investigated had this underactive MAO A gene, monoamine oxidase, and but that only began to show an impact when it was paired with childhood abuse.
Right, okay.
Now that's solid. That's solid evidence. And for women, it showed that they had an overactive MAO gene. And the men had the underactive. But this only became apparent in women who also had experienced childhood abuse, either sexual or aggressive physical abuse or divorce of the parents, something like that.
So that kind of plays off of the idea of nature and nurture, right?
Absolutely. You know, my favourite phrase, genetics is the gun and the environment is the trigger.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so...
That leads us to sort of one of the main questions, which is if you can sort of genetically inherit criminal behaviour, does that excuse that criminal behaviour?
That's a very interesting question. Does it excuse it?
Or can you be held accountable if you are born a certain way?
Personally, I think it would excuse it.
Okay.
But I would feel there's nowhere I could convince people with... to adopt that view who hold other views.
I see what you're saying. It's a very controversial topic.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. I think that maybe there's something about the idea of, like, what we were saying about how do you know, when with some mental disabilities, there are times where it's more prominent than others. And how do you know that this particular event was influenced by their mental disability?
At the time of the crime,
so
were
with,
they...
Yeah. Right, with schizophrenia or those kind of compulsive disorders, there are times when you have lapses that are heavier and more influential than times that aren't.
Yes.
And surely that it could affect your behaviour in times more than it could affect at other times. So do you think that... there is just an excuse for kind of all behaviour when it comes to this person, or just in... I mean, how do you determine
whether
it has that
effect?
Well,
the reality is that the amount of violent behaviour amongst people with psychotic disorders when they're not psychotic is very low.
Mm. Right. So just the fact that they did commit that crime is an indicator that they were... most likely in a manic episode.
Well, if not manic, then a psychotic.
Yeah,
episode. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that also brings me on to, because when talking to mental health, there's a certain sort of the linguistics you use. Like, I just misused the word manic, and we were also talking about prior to this, should we use the word mental illness, mental disorder, mental health problems. Sort of, it's a very touchy minefield where you can very easily step wrong.
I mean, I never use the word alcoholic.
No.
I always say alcohol dependent.
Oh,
because it's the use of the word alcoholic and stigmatizing it like this that will account for the fact that only 7% of people who require help in this country actually get it.
Mm.
The other 93% are too afraid of the stigma that it carries with it.
Yeah. So are you saying that we were talking about this earlier, because we find it kind of interesting that ever since we were little, the massive change in the media and in how people talk about mental health and mental well-being even has just completely burst. And we were wondering, do you think that maybe, you know, there's a line that you can draw that by talking so much about mental health, you're actually silencing some illnesses and some disabilities that should deserve a voice? Or maybe is it important to keep
that? That is a very good question and a very controversial subject.
Yeah.
So many very, very young people I know now will tell me that they have an eating disorder when, you know, they've just put on a few pounds. And it is this willingness to give everything a label. It almost means that you don't own it anymore. And that's a very, very faulty way of coping with the disorder, because mm-hmm. if you can label it, it's not mine, it's something else.
Right.
But if you couldn't label it, you might just say, oh, I'm just being greedy, yeah. and address that.
Yeah. And so maybe on the one hand, it means that, you know, we get to talk about things that we wouldn't ever own up to. But on the other hand, there are people that were just being human at that point in time,
yes.
and it wasn't necessarily a mental illness, and now they're amplifying it.
Absolutely. And of course, all are umbilically attached to YouTube and social media,
yes.
and it's played out there. But you're absolutely right. I mean, the fact that you can speak more openly about what's happening to you is a very positive thing.
Yeah. However, you, in order for you to be open, you need to have a very particular set or combination of issues. You can't, today at least, be open about, oh, I have schizophrenia, or I have a personality disorder, I have a, you know, so there are still things that are just not talked about, it's very stigmatized.
Oh, very definitely, yeah. Yes. And I read a report just a couple of days ago about people who, we know, sorry to deflect briefly, but people who end up in prison are very likely to have had an abusive background or a mental health disorder, up to 80%. And so they end up in prison because of their inability to cope healthily. Now, I understand this cannot apply to everybody, but if we use a broad brush, when they come out, because they've been in prison, they're very unlikely to find work, to be treated positively, to be positively reinforced in any way. So
it just reinforces it and goes back around again, doesn't
yes,
it?
Yes, and but they slide right back into where they came from.
So the reoffending rates with prisoners who have a mental disability is higher?
It is, yes, yes.
So what kind of, I mean, I guess the broad word of treatments, like what kind of help is there?
There is some help, and it has developed over the last few years, but it's still far from sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
And for some things like drug misuse and alcohol misuse, it's tried initially, but not to the extent that it should be. I mean, these people may need full withdrawal treatment, and that's not available. They will need therapy thereafter, they will need follow-up, that's not available. So I would hate to have an addictive disorder for which I've committed a crime to fund and end up in prison. My life effectively would be buggered.
I heard about they have the kind of the common talk therapies that they do in prisons, and I heard that for like the common psychopath, there was a story about how this individual was part of the talk therapy, and they're very good at kind of deceiving and manipulating people, and then once released from prison was, like you said, kind of came back straight into prison, and when confronted by the same person that was conducting the talk therapy, you know, he said, "Didn't you learn anything?" And the person responded with, "Yes, I heard that. I didn't know that someone could be so upset about their siblings having cancer." Apparently, one of the fellow
prison mates had was really upset about their sibling being ill, and so he didn't know this, and he said, well, now I know that I don't even have to manipulate the individual that I'm going after. I could go after their siblings and affect them just as well. So it was completely like unaffected.
Well, more than that, I mean, this person sounds like he or she had real psychopathic traits.
Oh, yes, yeah, for sure. Definitely.
So not just in for repeated shoplifting and with the drug habit.
No.
So very different genre of prisoner.
Yeah. I mean, what I've heard, there have been so many different types of ways of helping these people. But the ones that I've found that seem to have been the most successful have been the ones that simply try to teach them new habits, like that we call positive habits, and that they don't necessarily possess. But, I mean, is it necessarily helping them mentally? Probably not. You know, it doesn't seem like it's really trying to help what is deficient in their mind.
Well, quite. I mean, it leads to the big question, does prison work?
Right.
For most people, no, it doesn't.
So what would be your solution to that problem?
Well, what has been shown to work, and it's only really beginning to develop now, is rehabilitation. And prevention, of course, with people who may be vulnerable in the first place. And types of people who are vulnerable have been identified, but we're not doing enough preventive work right now. But that's one way. Another is, like Skinner said, punishment doesn't work. Reinforcement. If you want to promote positive behaviors, reinforcement is what works. Punishment doesn't. So if we just look at this, Frank Skinner's famous studies, if we try to rehabilitate the person and are more reinforcing of positive behaviours that person is showing, that is more likely.
Right, because obviously, just going back to psychopaths again, they commonly don't feel any kind of remorse or empathy, do they?
No.
So the idea behind punishment is completely redundant with them.
Yes, it is, yes. Well, we could adopt the American system of executing everybody.
Oh, Christ.
But, you know, I mean, how a civilized country can get away with
is
beyond me.
I'll rant for hours. But back to prison. Is there a mental disorder that you see is overrepresented in
substance misuse?
Yes. Is that both alcohol and drugs?
Yes,
or is it one? Yeah, okay.
Both alcohol and drugs.
Right.
Up to 80% of the population of inmates have substance misuse problems.
Right, because I read one of the slides from last week said that more than 70% of the UK prison population has two or more mental disorders. Is one of them included as substance misuse? Or?
It could be, but not necessarily, but more than likely.
Okay,
yeah.
So when mental illness is so vastly overrepresented in the criminal justice system, does that mean that we should fear people with mental disabilities and lock them up before they do anything criminal?
Oh, absolutely not. No, it means we should recognise them as a more vulnerable population and do more for them. Again, prevention, rehab, reinforcement, and providing people with jobs.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a very valid point for last one. Yeah.
Again, this report I read recently, I've forgotten the name of the charity, is it Outlook? it is...
They employ previous offenders.
Yeah. Yes, and they were saying that up to 80% of companies that they investigated won't employ people with a criminal history, even if that criminal history is spent, you know, if the time period has passed. So people are coming out of prison feeling very vulnerable, isolated from friends, family, may not even have a home anymore. They still have their mental health disorders, may still have a problem with addiction. They cannot get a job.
It just goes straight back round, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's not good for anyone.
On the other hand, though, I do understand companies, if you have a choice between someone who has a complete clean criminal record and, you know, grade A results from universities and institutions, and as a general person, if I had a company and I were to choose, you know, who's my next employee going to be, I'd choose between someone who seems to have been an honest and trustworthy person, and then someone who has, you know, had a drug abuse or maybe some very underrepresentative mental illnesses.
Yeah, which is why we need to talk about a sort of a change in perception.
Right,
that someone,
right.
Because you use the words trustworthy.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's what I was kind of like trying to get into, like what the way that they would think about it.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that they're potentially, I understand why they choose that, but at the same time it might not be accurate.
No, absolutely. I can absolutely understand where you're coming from. But possibly something like a government-funded scheme that would oversee the employment of this person, that may possibly reward the company in some way for employing the person, that keeps an eye on the person whilst they're in employment. There are things that can be done about it, but we haven't started to look at that.
Just one last question that I had. We briefly touched on the idea of being open about mental disabilities and mental health issues, and I just wondered whether you thought that there was whether there was too much discussion ever about these kind of situations, like if giving more publicity to individuals, whether that would actually fuel their mental health issues, or whether it's more beneficial to them to keep it private and personal. Is it possible to ever go too far with these things?
Well, personally, I would say that yes, it is very easy to go too far. But I'm not another person who needs to talk about it. It's a very personal decision, I think. If I had a mental health disorder, I guess nobody but my family would know about it. But another person I work with, let's say, if he or she had a mental health disorder, everybody in the workplace would know about it. It depends very much on what the person is comfortable with.
Yeah. At university, we get excused. I mean, you can apply for, as a disability service, you get given more time on reports and on assignments. But I find it kind of, this is something I've personally struggled with, is that it seems like a difficult system to get into. Obviously, I find it fantastic that the university has these things in place already.
Yes.
But in order to have that achieved for you, you have to first confront someone about it and then talk about it for them to be able to prove your case that you have it, and then they can do it. But obviously, with some mental disabilities, is actually preventing you from going to talk to people about it. So it seems like a circle that doesn't work for many people.
I understand what you're saying. Yes, I'm not quite sure what the way around that would be. other than to speak with the people who are organising.
Right, but then that
the
requires
system.
It as well, doesn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, I think that maybe, like we were saying, maybe needs to be a change in rhetoric around around everything that's concerned, in other words, mental health. I think you've definitely helped us a lot with this. Is there anything that, looking at the way that the media and kind of the general public displays and also receives information and ideas about and concepts about mental health, is there anything that you would want to have seen kind of changed in the way that people process this and talk about it?
I think that we've got a great journey to go before we address this properly. At the moment, if the way we perceive people as not looking great, as being obese, or as being too skinny, because that makes us feel better about ourselves. We do the very same with mental health disorders. If I see somebody who's clearly having a psychotic episode, I think, well, I'm healthy. And I know that sounds very glib and it doesn't explain a lot to you, but we need to see other people as not as good as us in order to feel good about ourselves. That's a central weakness that human beings have, I think, and until we can begin to address that, which will take millennia, we're not going to see many great changes. I know I don't sound very optimistic, but...
realistic.
Yeah. Mm.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's very lovely having you.
This has been very enlightening.
Yeah, this is a very interesting conversation.
Well, thank you very much. I'm really flattered that I was asked. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Two is a company, three's a crowd.
So that was Catherine Gilvary.
Thank you so much, Catherine. We were so grateful that you joined us for our first ever episode.
Yeah, and that you took time from your busy schedule to sit down and have a talk with us.
Yeah, and we hope you liked it as well. And if you did, please do give us a great rating on Apple Podcasts, as we are now published there as well. And you can keep getting in contact with us on all of our social media links, which are posted in the description. So... yeah, we'd love to hear from you. We're very active and we're going to be posting some exclusive material and questions and polls all on our Twitter and so on. So we're looking forward to hearing from you from there.
Right, so next week's podcast episode is going to be on altruism. Are you really that selfless?
Yeah, so that's a really interesting topic. Like we mentioned in the introduction, we're super excited about this one. It touches more on my side of my
biology.
My field of knowledge. So really excited about that one. And yeah, up until then, have a great week and we'll see you next Wednesday.
Don't you know that two's a marriage, three's a crowd?